friend, by the end of this series, you are going to be well equipped. You're going to have all the things that you need to know about mental health. This is our last episode in our series, Mental Health is Wealth. Coming up is my friend and colleague, Brandy. Brandy is really the bomb. Listen to her resume on this interview. And we are going to talk about how she got in the field. We're going to talk about the difference between licensed professional counselors and licensed clinical social workers. But then, honey, we are getting into the topic of trauma. And we're going to talk about how people experience trauma and why people tend to minimize trauma. We're going to talk about all of that good stuff. So I pray that this episode is eye-opening for you. Make sure you DM me your takeaway. Share this episode with your people. It has been an honor to bring this series to you. Mental health is wealth. Next up, you're going to hear my girl, Brandy. Hey friend, I'm Robin May, and a few of the professional hats that I wear includes being a transformational speaker, a life coach, and a licensed therapist. And personally, well, I'm a wife, a mommy to three girls, and a pastor's wife, just to name a few. Girl, I'm over here doing all the things while trying to stay in shape and keep my skin clear. But the truth is, I don't want to be known for being busy. I think that's a scheme that somebody set up. No, I want to be known for living a life that is in perfect alignment with what God intended. And I want to help you do the same. So it's with that in mind, I'd like to welcome you right here to Intentional Conversations with Robin May and friends. Over here, we're creating a safe space to have real conversations with real women on real topics. This is a judgment-free zone where we can be vulnerable and honest and curious about our lives so that we can elevate not just what we do, but who we are. So if any of that resonates with you, again, welcome to our safe space. This is Intentional Conversations with Robin May and friends. Well, we are back for another part of our series, Mental Health is Wealth. And I am overjoyed and excited, and I could just get so crunk because my sister is here. Brandy is one of those friends that I think we're this for each other, honey. We can say, I need you, and we both say yes. Yes. And so, Brandy, welcome to the podcast. Is this your first time on the podcast?
I believe so. Well, other than the recording, the first, well, it's technically my second, but.
Okay. Well, I am super excited to have you back. If I can't remember, but I am super, oh, yes, because you came to the church. We did not put that on the podcast. And so this is your first year. Now, for most of my audience, this is not their first time I'm being exposed to you, but I do want you to introduce yourself. Let them know, girl, all of your resume, because this is the bomb. So tell us about yourself.
Oh, goodness. First of all, thank you, Robin, for always considering me. You know, I always say you're the Michelle Obama in my world. So anytime, you know, you think enough of me to have me to speak to your audience, it's an honor. That's first of all. But as you mentioned, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I have been in the field since 2007. So that's about 17 years. Oh, goodness.
Yes, girl.
I have run the gamut of mental health care from inpatient hospitalization to working in jails, court system, school setting, home-based services, private practice, and now currently working with incarcerated veterans. So I go into prisons.
Girl.
Yes, alongside my private practice part-time, of course. And I am currently licensed in 5 states, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, New York, and California. And so I am providing services in all of those states virtually. And I think that's about it as far as my.
Well, you forgot one more thing. Okay. So, but I didn't ask you that. So I'm going to put you on the spot with it. You also run a very, very successful nonprofit. Tell us about that.
Thank you. So I run a nonprofit called Pearls of Esther, and it is a nonprofit that I started in 2010. And our passion is equipping women with the resources that they need to be mentally, emotionally, physically, financially whole and healthy. And more recently, we have pivoted more into teenage girls and hoping to decrease instances or incidences of depression, anxiety, and suicide in teens. So.
I'm super excited. And depending upon when you all see this, I am trying to pull it up so that Brandon don't have to tell me because I should be able to know this for myself. Okay, depending upon when you all watch this, you will have access to this video before the Beyond the Mask Mother-Daughter Edition that's taking place, which is Saturday, June 29th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Absolutely. Which Robin
Yes,
will
it's
be a speaker, so
yes, I'm super excited. So if you're watching this in the year of 2024, in the month of June, before June 29th, head on over to
www.pearlsofester.com. Just click our e-store and you should be able to purchase your ticket there.
Awesome. Okay. So we are diving into this conversation. Brandy, you and I can really fall into these conversations because it's definitely our passion. We met working at a partial hospitalization program, and it was just literally kindred spirits, our hearts connected, us both being women of faith, honey, who love Jesus. That really fueled our connection, and I'm just grateful because we've been gone from there. How many years would you say? How many years has it been?
Gosh, for me, it's been about 13 years.
Yeah, I think it's that because you know what? I think right, my middle baby is 15, and I think she was the last child I had there.
Yes, she
So
was your
I think
chocolate chip cookie that you would bring. She would come to the office and you would have her
yes.
on your hip. So yes, she was
Exactly.
small. It's so surreal that she has grown up.
Taller than me. And so, yeah, so it has been a long, long time. So to dive in first for the people who are listening, I want them to be able to know about your passion. So how did you even come into the field? Like, what was your entry into doing mental health?
So believe it or not, and when I tell this story, Robin, it just sounds all over the place. But believe it or not, when I was in high school and I was graduating high school, I wanted to be a crime scene investigator. That was what I wanted to do. And that was at the
Yeah,
time
I ain't
of,
never heard this.
really?
No, okay, keep going.
Oh, well, buckle up. I wanted to be a crime scene investigator. So that was at the time CSI Miami, all of those shows had gained popularity. And so I went to Florida State and I majored in criminology and psychology because I was like, this is going to get me into a forensic science program somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Along the way, because I was also involved in numerous organizations on campus, I really found my footing in community service. And it started out, I remember this one community service project where we would go to the nursing homes on Sundays and just bring smiles to the elderly individuals that were there. And I really felt so, I can remember coming home from those outreaches and feeling so fulfilled and just going on and on and on to my mom about how good it felt to be able to help people and to bring smiles to people's faces who were often either ill or just felt alone. And so that passion just continued to grow. And eventually I said, you know what? I want to do something to where I can make helping people my lifestyle. I can make bringing smiles
Wow.
people's faces a part of my life, and it would be like bomb if I could get paid for it too, right? And so I looked into psychology programs. I spoke with a dear friend. She was actually a licensed clinical social worker. I
Wow.
applied to five different, because at that time my passion for counseling had started to develop, and she was a social worker. I applied to five different psychology programs and I got rejected by all five. Baby, not an acceptance letter in sight.
Brandy, girl, you need to write a letter to every one of them that said no.
Right,
Say, what you think about me now?
with a copy of all my
Your
credentials.
licenses, yes.
Right, but yeah, I got rejected from all five, and it was at that point that I really was like, God, what am I going to do? And when I credit this friend to this day, because I feel like God sent her to give me an alternate way. And she said, girl, what do you want to do? And I told her what I wanted to do. And she said, you know, you don't have to be a psychologist to do all of that. I know that you think that, you know, and nothing against the field of psychology, but she was like, have you thought about a degree in social work? I was like, no, because I don't want to go snatch nobody's kids. Like, what are you talking about? She was like, no, like you can be a social worker, go on, get your master's, your licensure, and you can do counseling. You could be in private practice. You can, be hands-on as it relates to community work. And she inspired me, and I applied for the master's program at FSU, Florida State, and got accepted on a provisional status. And just the way it just all fell into place. And I knew that it was such a God thing. And I knew that God redirected me, and I'm sure he kept me out of a whole bunch of student loans too.
I mean, how Randy, I have not heard that story. That is incredible.
Oh
That
my,
is really incredible.
I guess because I save it to like share with like teens, because I feel like there's such a pressure about like know what you want to do and don't get rejected from your college. And I'm like,
Yes.
oh baby, I got five rejections. And
Yes.
so yeah, that's
I
how
have
I.
been tempted to write a letter because I applied to when I decided I wanted to do this to be a therapist. I applied to Georgia State and Georgia State turned me down. And so been wanting to write them a letter and stuff. How you like me now about that?
Right, with your head, professional headshot and
Yes.
everything.
Exactly. Well, I am. That story has really inspired me, and I hope that those of you who are watching and listening that it inspires you. Because here's the deal. Brandy says she saves that for students, but a lot of us grown folk who are trying new things and stepping out there need to know that as well. So let's talk a little bit about, like, I want this conversation to be educational. So let's talk a little bit about the difference, as you understand it, between what I do as a licensed professional counselor, and I'll kind of share my perspective as well, and your degree as a social worker, because we do a lot of the same work. But what would you say is the difference between the two?
I would say in the educational training, as far as social work goes, there is an emphasis on community connections, community resources, linkage to community resources. And so, for example, let's say a client comes in for counseling because they are depressed. Well, of course, we can provide counseling as far as depression goes, but then we also may dig into family dynamics, of course, and I think counseling does that as well. We also may dig into what is your home situation like? Oh,
Yes.
you're on the brink of homelessness. Let me find you some resources. Let me connect you to some
Absolutely.
resources. So that piece is a big part of what we do. And that's not to say that counselors can't or won't do the same, but it's just kind of something that is embedded in. I don't want to say you're a bad social worker if you just do counseling and don't provide any resource linkage, but if you are a counselor and you don't provide any resource linkage, I'm gonna need for you to get your life together, because that's just what we do. And also there are two tracks of this the social work degree that you can have, right? You can have the social policy administration, which is more so lobbying if you want to get into the political arena, as far as lobbying for rights for certain groups or things like that. And then there's also the clinical track. And so again, that kind of goes back to that heavy emphasis on the community work. So
Absolutely. And that's definitely how I understand it. Now, those of you who are in the field with us, don't come for us. Do not come for us if we're not explaining it the way you would. That
right.
has been my understanding of it as well. But whether you are a licensed professional counselor, which is my degree or my license, LPC, or whether you are a licensed clinical social worker, you can provide one-on-one therapy. My girl, Dr. Tori, was on. She is a PhD level LPC, not a psychologist though, and we all are in private practice, and so that's the work we do. So, Brandy, if you had to, I'm putting you on the spot here, but if you had to identify in your private practice, if you could create the private practice filled with your ideal population, what would that be?
Oh, that is a good question. I, as strange as it may sound, I enjoy walking clients through grief. And of course, trauma is like that's the street that I drive on.
Because we're about to get into it, honey. Yes.
Yes, as far as if it's like men, women, children, adults. I don't specialize in working with children specifically. So I would
Yes.
say teens and adults are my passion. It doesn't matter male or female. But those areas, I'm sorry, those two populations are where I seem to feel most
Fulfilled.
most fulfilled. Yes. So, but
It's
hey,
interesting.
I
Yeah,
know.
it's interesting because I don't work with children either. Was there a decision, a clear decision for you with that?
You know, that's such an interesting question because there was a time when I first started counseling that I worked with children, but then I also had to because I was trying to get these clinical hours to get my licensure. So the easiest job for me to take at the time was work at the time in Georgia, like home-based clinical services had taken off, especially with Medicaid
Yes.
and things like that.
Yes.
So the easiest jobs for me to get were in home, in school, counseling with children. But I think if that wasn't a factor, then I probably from the beginning would not have chosen children as my primary audience.
It's interesting because same here, girl. When I was trying, when so what we're talking about is you go to school. And then you have to do your internship. Then you finish school and you have to do post-master's hours. And you're trying to get your hours so that you can get licensed. And that's when I worked a lot with, necessarily even work with teens, Brandy, but definitely not children, because, and I'm about to take this question to you in a moment, but my reasoning is just my therapeutic approach just was not applicable for children. That's number one. So that was the deal with children. Then for me, for teens, if I'm honest, it was a clear decision because I would be doing some good work, Brand. I mean, I'm doing some good work. These teens are getting ahas. Then they go back home and they come back like we ain't, like nothing that we said mattered. But this was the line in the sand for me why I stopped working with teenagers. I could not discern what was danger. What do I mean? What was the line of when I needed to be telling their parents something and what was their confidentiality? I couldn't discern that line because they do deserve confidentiality. So I had to determine, is this threatening to them, their life or their safety? So when a child is telling me she plans on sneaking out of the house to go see her boyfriend, see, to me, that's life or death. So I'm wanting to call your mama and tell your mama that you're about to sneak out. And Brandy, I couldn't determine if that was advisable or against her, what is the word I just said, her confidentiality or not.
And like the work that I'm doing now, just because of the contract that I have, it is primarily adults. If I have teens, then it's, well, I guess they are legally adults because it would be like 18 and 19 year olds. So they are technically adults, but yeah, it can get very, very tricky. And just when I was studying for the licensure exam for California, California had, I always say California is like its own planet because their rules are so different in terms of confidentiality and things like that. So that was a struggle for me. I failed that test the first time, actually, by one
Yeah.
point. Nonetheless,
No.
yes, but a big part of it was deciphering California law because that confidentiality piece is so different. They have teens have a little bit more liberty to say certain things in session that you wouldn't report to their
Yeah,
parents.
girl. Or if a teenager, say it's a 14, see, 18, you're technically an adult in the eyes of the law, so that's clear to me. But when a 14-year-old is telling me that she is sleeping around and her mother is telling me, oh, she's a virgin. See,
Yeah, you
I
have
couldn't
to
figure
keep
it out.
that.
So I knew that that wasn't, that that protected her confidentiality. But then I'm thinking, girl, you could be endangering your life with it. Anyway, so that's what was the line in the sand for me. Okay, so we asked like your population. But now if you had to share, what is your therapeutic framework? What is the primary way that you support clients?
As it relates to, remember I talked about grief and trauma. As it relates to grief, what I found just in my own experiences with grief, and if I look away, that's because I'm thinking. So when I
Yeah,
think,
yeah.
look away at times. But what I found in my own process with grief, going through grief counseling myself and just doing the grief work with clients, I find that what most clients need that I interact with is some level of normalcy through their grieving process. And so what that looks like for me is not being too technical, not necessarily ascribing to a certain framework. I always throw that five stages of grief stuff out the window. And I create a safe space for my clients to sit in their grief. And I know it sounds crazy. And I tell them, I'm like, I know you feel like you are on this roller coaster ride, and baby, you want to unstrap this belt and get off of this ride. But I do not recommend getting off this ride, but what I will recommend is we sit in this on this roller coaster together, because eventually the highs and the drops, the drops won't make you feel quite so sick. I promise you. But we're going to have to sit in this together. And
I
so,
love that.
Yeah, creating that has been what I've, the feedback that I've gotten has been most helpful. As it relates to trauma, of course, and even when I'm dealing with mood disorders, anxiety, depression, or if it's just everyday stress, I typically use a cognitive behavioral therapy or CBT, because I really like to explore the kind of the people's thought processes. And I always think that the root of anxiety or depression goes back to a negative thought about who we are or what we are not. And I have to explore those core beliefs and ask, well, where did that come from? And
absolutely
start that work. And so I would say CBT, if I have to choose one, just therapeutic, you know, CBT. And motivational interviewing has been helpful as well. Especially again, as you're dealing with mood disorders, some personality disorders, but that's a whole nother podcast.
That's a whole nother. Yes. Okay. In the first episode that I did within this series, everyone, I talked about, I kind of broke down mood disorders versus personality disorders. It really is, this first episode in this series really was a almost like a mind dump of all things that people have asked me over the years about therapy. I do want you to explain, though, one more thing about what you just said, and then we're going to get into trauma. I want you to explain motivational interviewing. And the reason why I'm asking all these questions, y'all, is because as you're going to seek therapy, you may want to ask the therapist, the potential therapist, what her or his methodology is. And so when you talk about motivational interviewing, explain that.
Motivational interviewing is basically asking a series of questions to explore. I'm not really telling the client why they are doing what they are doing or telling them about their patterns. I'm asking questions that would help them to do their own digging to understand their patterns. And
absolutely.
So, you know, there's not a specific like set of questions that, you know, you use with every specific client, but it is a technique to help the purpose is to help clients to be able to gain insight. And I'm just a tool to be able to help you to gain your own insight into why you may be falling into certain unhealthy patterns that are not working.
What is this flow chart? I can't remember. Y'all gonna think, Robin, really, I can't think of the name of the flow chart, but you know how it's this flow chart that asks a question and it says yes or no. And depending on what you say, it goes down one path and goes down the other. That's kind of my idea when I talk about motivational interviewing. I'm literally just walking this path. It doesn't matter what your answer is, that answer is going to reveal another way that I can go. And so it's really this beautiful dance that allows the client to hear themselves, to hear themselves. One of my girls, I'm not going to say one of my favorite clients, because some of my clients watch this podcast, Brandy, they be like, were you talking about me when you said when you said my favorite client, were you talking about me?
Right. Yeah, don't do that. Don't get in trouble on this podcast.
Don't get in trouble. But one of my girls, she said, when we were talking about something, and I started using the technique of motivational interviewing. Now, y'all, in the session, we're not telling the client now. We're about to start motivational interviewing. We're not telling them that. It's just what's occurring. And she started talking out loud what she was thinking, and she said, every time I get on these sessions, And I have told myself this whole story. I started talking it out and I recognize that I'm catastrophizing the story. And girl, I told her, girl, go write that down because it's such an aha.
Yeah.
Many times when you start to hear yourself, it'll help you see, because baby, if it's bad, we're going to call it bad. But if it's a 10 level bad, but we've made it a 20 level bad, we are exacerbating ourselves. Let's just keep it at a 10 level bad.
Yes.
Y'all, we are officially launched. Bite-sized breakthroughs for busy women is officially ready for you to dive in. Y'all, I am super proud of this membership. I created this membership for the busy woman. But listen, we're not glorifying busy on this side of the world, but we are working within the realities of your life. And so you can invest in bite-sized breakthroughs for busy women. And once a week, for 15 minutes or less, you will receive an aha, a nugget, a principle, a scripture, something for you to ponder for the week, for you to take notes, for you to consider what that principle means to you, to help you understand you, to help you get a PhD in you. And y'all, the investment is so minimal. The investment is less than you would even imagine for you to get this level of transformation. It is my passion to help as many of you transform your life, to live intentionally, fully engaged, to elevate not just what you do, but who you are. So if you are ready for transformation, just head on over to robinmayonline.com/breakthrough. And if you have any questions for me, head on over to Instagram and DM me. I cannot wait to talk to you about it. I am so proud and so excited about this membership. That's not extended. Okay, so let's get into what you love, honey. And the reason why I say that, y'all, Brandy and I talk often, and when we start to talk about trauma, honey, it is such a passion for both of us, just understanding it. And I think, Brandy, because we know how the brain works and how culture and society can impact how we process our realities. So I want to talk about trauma, but it was something I wanted to ask you before we got into it. Wait. It was something else that came up for me that I wanted to ask you, and I can't remember. So if it comes back up, I'll come back to it. All right. Tell me a little bit about, if I were to say, Brandy, there are people who are listening who really don't understand if whether or not what they're dealing with really is trauma, or if it's just a situation. How would you help them sort through, no, baby, this is traumatic. How would you define that for them?
That's a very good question. And that's a question that I feel like we deal with so much just in everyday life. And I really hate that social media has taken therapeutic terms and has completely misused and abused and run
yes.
away with them. But that's another podcast again.
Yes.
But I would say any experience that you have had that has impacted your mental and emotional well-being to the point that it has also impacted your quality of life could very well be a traumatic experience. I often tell this story about how a few years ago, one of my girlfriends was in a car accident, was hit by an intoxicated driver. And a few months later, we were just kind of talking about it. And I asked, well, how are you doing? How are you doing with the healing process? Both her and her child had sustained some injuries. And I remember her sharing with me, she was still having physical pain. She was having nightmares about the accident. And she's literally just in tears as she's telling me this. And she said, but other people have survived worse, so it wasn't that bad. It couldn't have been that bad because people have been hit by drunk drivers and they die or they're paralyzed. So what I'm going through, it can't be traumatic because I survived. And I tell that story because I think we walk away from situations and we think, well, somebody else went through this and they didn't, you know, it was much worse for them. So it couldn't have been traumatic for me. But trauma really isn't based on who, it's not one of those things where you get a medal for how much you can
Oh,
survive.
that's worse. Right.
Trauma. It is very specific to the individual. And sometimes most times the healing starts when a person can say, I went through this and it really was that bad. Sometimes we don't want to admit that it really just was that bad and
Absolutely.
How it affected me. So that's what I would say. If it's impacting your quality of life, your sleep patterns, you're having nightmares, you're having flashbacks, your anxiety is up, you're easily startled, you're having physical manifestations, whether it's headaches, you're dissociating. If you're having symptoms, then it was traumatic for you. It doesn't matter if you were bit by a dog and this is happening.
You tell the people. No, I did not set this up because, Brandy, you know I'm terrified of dogs. And so my response is based also tell the people, even if you were bit by a dog.
Yes, if you were bit by a dog and you were having these residual effects, it was a traumatic experience. Again, it is based on the individual. So definitely it can't be compared to anybody else's trauma or who survived this with, oh, they had more scars than me. It doesn't matter.
So, you know, let's use this dog analogy. And I know y'all are sick of me talking about me and these dogs, but the way I react now at 49 to something that happened to me when I was 8 or 9 is a direct example of how trauma impacts you. Brandy, I was playing with a family dog, not our family, but I was playing with a family dog. I went over this particular aunt's house all the time. And this dog, I would always play with the dog. The dog turned around and bit me this one particular time. It was devastating to me because it hurt so bad. I had played with this dog before and so couldn't understand what I had done differently. Well, then after that, I was at home and I went outside to go play. This is a totally different day, a totally different time. I go outside to go play and this humongous dog comes chasing me. And Brandy, my memory is really not good and I'm pleading the blood of Jesus over it, but I distinctly remember running around from my yard to the yard across the street, back to my yard, and this dog is chasing me. It's a huge dog. My mother is opening the door. And so I can't get anything in me to run the way my mom is telling me, and this dog is chasing me. You combine both of those experiences, and now a seed was planted that I can't trust animals.
Right.
And that seed has continued to grow as I have these different experiences. And so again, for somebody else though, because Brandy, somebody listening to us is saying, well, Robin, I got bit by a dog too. But you didn't have the reaction that I had.
Right, exactly.
And that's totally okay. Okay.
Exactly.
So when you meet a client you're listening to them, what do you think it is that causes them to dismiss, and you know what I'm going to say, another word, to normalize the weight of what they're carrying? Do you know what I mean? Because a lot of people will normalize the fact that they're having headaches or that they are still dreaming about it. What do you think that is that causes them to normalize what you and I can hear as traumatic?
I think it really is based on what a person believes about their ability to shoulder pain, how much pain they think that they should carry, and how worthy and deserving they are of care.
Yes.
You get someone who grew up thinking that you whine too much, you cry too much. You're supposed to just take it and, you know, just figure it out. Then what they believe is that whatever pain I'm in, I'm not supposed to cry about this. I should be able to just suck it up and just keep going. And then, of course, very often with trauma, especially when we get into abuse and things of that nature, there is, a self-esteem component to it. So they may not, again, be they may not even think they're worthy of the care that admitting that this is a traumatic experience would warrant, right? So it's just like people get sick and no, they're in a lot of pain or they're very ill, but they don't go to the hospital because they feel like, you know, it's not that bad. I could treat this at home. Well, no, it is bad because you could bleed out or, you know, so it's kind of that same thing. So I like to explore why they don't feel that they are worthy of admitting that it's that bad and receiving the care that and the concern that comes with admitting that it was that bad.
You know, it's interesting you said that. I have a thought, but I wanted to go here. My sister told me one time she was dealing with something, and it was, I couldn't understand why she was staying in the situation. And she said this to me. She said, I recognize that I have a high tolerance for pain. And so I stay in situations longer than I should because I keep telling myself, I can handle this pain. And so it made me think what you said. No, you don't have to, though. I call it white knuckling through life. So many of us are white knuckling through life. But I wonder also, tell me what you think about this. I think many times, particularly for women of color, that's a lot of you who are watching this, although I have some folks here who are not Black girls, and we are so happy that you are here. But particularly for women of color, Brandy, what do you think about this? A lot of us are watching our moms, our grandmoms, our aunties. I'm from Texas. We say aunties. And we think my mama dealt with this. My mama handled this, almost like this generational tolerance. And that causes me to think, why is this about to take me out when it didn't take my mama out? What do you think about that?
You know, it's so interesting, Robin, because as my mom is getting older, and she don't think she's getting older, but she's getting older.
She's so fly, baby. And when she hear this, she gonna get you, but go ahead.
She's definitely gonna get me. Thank you. Yes, she keeps it fly. But it's so interesting, the conversations. I value the conversations when we go back and talk about things that were traumatic for her and hearing her side. Now, my mom is not my friend. I'm not one of her little friends. Like, I'm clear on that. You know what they say? I'm not one of her friends. But when we talk on that level, and I can understand and I hear her with a different ear than I may have before. Am I making sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now when she's explaining to me, well, I went through this, and I say, yeah, but I didn't know that, you know, that it affected you this way. But she can really, she really has in various moments revealed her heart. I didn't know what to do in this situation. I was scared. You know, I went through this and I had three babies to take care of. I went through this. And I didn't know what to do. This is how I handled this. I had to go talk to my mom so that I wouldn't do anything out of the, you know, just out of order, you know, what to do. So I think if we were to have those conversations, then we, and maybe because we're older now and we're adults and maybe they feel like we would understand, but I'm willing to bet if we had those conversations about what we perceived could have been traumatic for them and just listen to how they went through it and asked, like, well, how did you feel going through that? I'm sure that we would find that they did not process it as easily or as gracefully as we think that they did. They just made it look easy.
Girl, absolutely. And I think you're right. It's the older we get, but I also believe that the more, like, I'm with you. I'm so frustrated with how social media takes therapeutic terms because it waters down the significance. But the benefit of that is that people are talking about things more and we're able to understand, no, baby, you, that was a challenge for you. And so I think it's both. And I think we're older and maybe the stigma is starting to decrease a little bit. Okay, so we're just about done, but I want to ask you this. There are a lot of people who have gone through, and people are listening to us and they're like, okay, I hear you. It was traumatic. And what? Like, what do you say when it comes to healing from traumatic experiences? It's one thing to acknowledge, yes, I went through this trauma, but most of the times my clients say to me, okay, now what? What am I supposed to do with it? What would be your answer to that? Once they've acknowledged, you're like, okay, yes, Robin, yes, Brandy, it was traumatic. Is there anything I can do about it?
I would say the first part would be, after you acknowledge it, really also not just acknowledging that it happened, but also acknowledging beliefs that you formed as a result of it. What emotions are you, did you feel and are you still feeling as a result of it? I find that digging through the emotional components of it takes time. Sometimes trauma can be like a box, and I'm going to call it a treasure box because it's like you have this box with all these things, all this these ideals, memories, beliefs, emotions, all these things stored in this box. And I think, and maybe it's a human thing, but we like to keep trauma tucked away. We like to keep it in this secret place. And then when we start to expose it, there's so many components of it. And so for at least a few sessions, we're just digging through that box and we're pulling stuff out. Oh, I didn't know that was in there. What
Yes.
is this? I didn't know that was, we're just digging, we're just pulling stuff out of that box. And we're looking at it and we're saying, okay, how is this still affecting me? And also, so I recommend with clients giving yourself grace as you as we open that box and we start to explore what all the ways that you were impacted by this. Give yourself grace. Don't put a timeline on your feelings.
Yes.
It's a journey. Yeah, I think that's been the biggest thing is I constantly have to tell my clients, give yourself grace because they're like, I shouldn't still be crying about this because this happened when I
Girl, that is a top. It is a common statement, and I love that. And I'm working on a book I'm gonna release one day, child, but I just write down nuggets and I probably have it. Let me see. Y'all, I'm over here digging. I have a notebook. I'm trying to see if I can grab it real quick. As you were saying that, oh, this is it right here. As you were saying that, it made me think of something that I have written down before. And I think I call it personal point of impact. The personal point of impact. No, I call it personality prior to impact. Watch this, Brandy. Who were you before life started happening to you? That person is your true personality. Revisiting her, going back to the purest place, will help you uncover or rediscover the uninhibited you. So what do I mean? Life happens, and when those life moments happen, it can shake you at your core, and it begins to change your belief about you, about your destiny, about God. And trying to go back to that point of impact and discovering what story was formed that may or may not be true. And that takes time. That is a journey. And you get to redefine and rediscover who it is you are and who it is you want to be. And that's the beautiful point of therapy.
Yes, I love that, Robin. As you were talking, I just was thinking of, and I've shared on your platform previously about my own traumatic experience. And what's interesting, as you were talking about who you were before it happened, what's interesting is that it's almost like, and if we have any trauma survivors listening, I know you can also relate. You have a, I always call it a line of demarcation, and it's like who
Yes.
I was before and who I was after. And so I've told people before, I was like, it's so interesting because when I think back on certain periods of my life, it's almost like looking at a different person than I am now. And initially, I found myself being resentful that I had to endure or I went through what I went through. And it did change some things, but I've become ultimately so grateful because what I know now, I've chosen the side of healing that says, look how much more my eyes are open to
Yes.
what this is like and how it helps my clients and how just much more aware I am. But absolutely, you will not go back to being, more than likely will not go back to being that person before. And another part of healing is being okay with that. and letting go, feeling resentful that, well, this happened to me and now I can't trust anyone. You eventually learn to reframe that to say, this happened to me and it opened my eyes that, you know, I can learn to trust again. And I also give myself grace to be able to ask more questions or not trust so freely, but also set some boundaries in place. And so it definitely changes you, but let me back up. Not changes you, it changes your perspective, but you ultimately learn to be grateful for all the ways that it also opens your eyes and what you learn about yourself. And in some ways, I don't want to go back to who I was before.
That's exactly what I was going to say, because there you get to, and this, okay, let me say this very carefully, because sometimes when you're talking about trauma and helping people unpack that and you begin to use the word choice, it can make, depending on where you are on the journey of healing, it can start to feel like you are responsible for what happened to you. So we don't want to make that confusion.
Right.
But what we can say, and this is what I use all the time, if something happened to you, you cannot wait for whomever that person was or that situation was to come back and restore you. They're not coming back. They're not going to come back and do anything. So at some point on your journey, you have an opportunity to reframe, like you said, and look at what occurred and what pieces of who you are as a result that you want to carry on in your journey. The wisdom that you've acquired, the sensitivity that you've required, the ways that you know how to self-protect now that you didn't know how to do then, those are beautiful gifts from that pain. Now, Brandy, what's powerful about this, I'm working on a message that's called The Bible Ben Said That, but there are psychologists and researchers now who have shown and learned that people who survive from traumatic experiences are people who can find a higher meaning from that traumatic experience, whether you're faith-based or not, the people who can find a higher meaning. And so for those of us who love Jesus, we know that all things work together for good. We don't have to worry about what the researchers say. We can go to what the word says. All things work together for good, but you don't have to go on that journey alone. You can invite me or Brandy or another mental health professional in to hold your hand who has the skill set, who has been trained. Because if not, baby, it's good. When you're in the hands of somebody who ain't been trained, baby, that's dangerous.
And we're talking about degree, trained, license.
That has a board. It's going to tell them what they can and cannot do.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Because now y'all know I'm a life coach, so I have no problem with life coaches, but I have a problem with people who are not trained to handle those sensitive areas, because you could end up being more traumatized in the wrong hands.
That's, you know, on TikTok, and I hope I don't get in trouble here, but let them come for me. On TikTok, there's this thing about these veneer techs who don't go to dental school, but they're just people who just, I don't even know what kind of training, but they're able to do veneers, and all these stories are coming out about people's teeth being messed up. So if you choose to go to a veneer tech, AKA someone who is not trained for your trauma, I don't even know.
It's dangerous.
It's dangerous.
Because even you and I have been in this field 17 plus years, and I still keep myself somewhere getting trained on how to help people navigate. Brandy, I had someone recently that I had to say, I am not equipped for this level of complex trauma. I had to say, I am not equipped for this. And so I'm going to refer you to somebody that is. And I got 17 years in this. So that's just our warning. Be very, very careful. So ask the questions. If you have a therapist, see if they say that they are trauma-informed. Ask them what their experiences have been helping people navigate trauma. Because if you are accountable to a board, you are accountable to say whether or not you are trained in something or not.
Right. Absolutely. And it's so interesting you say that, Robin, because I think that there is such a, especially coming out of the pandemic, with all the social justice stuff that was going on, there is such a conversation about Black mental health professionals, and I love it. I'm very glad that that's happening. And I have gotten potential clients who book with me and they say, oh, well, I saw you on the directory and you look so nice. And, you know, I was looking for a Black therapist and I read your bio. But going back to your point about if I don't feel that I can help this person in the way that they need, or I'm not clinically trained in a way that would provide the best level of care, I'm like, listen, I know you saw that profile picture and I, you know, you were like, yes, a Black thing. Like, I love it. Trust me, I do. But I'm very candid when I say I would be doing you a disservice if I sat here and acted like I can provide the best level of care for what you are experiencing.
For this particular issue,
particular issue, or sometimes it's an issue of transference, right? I've referred out because I'm like, you know, I've experienced this and I'm in my own journey with this, and this may impact my ability to provide care. I don't think we talk enough about transference or counter transference.
Right.
And what it looks like, and I have to, you know, at the time go to my supervisor and say, I need to refer out because I want to make sure that none of my stuff is interfering with the care that I'm providing to this patient.
Just love, okay, we are done, but I love that we ended on that because I think that there are so many people who are looking for support. And again, you all, and I've talked about this before so many times, but the reason you want somebody that is licensed is because we are accountable to a board. We have something to lose. We have something to lose. And so we are consistently accountable. We are, because baby, September, I got to get all these hours, these continued education courses.
Listen, I got 5 licensures to get CEU courses for. So can you
even think about that part?
What my life is like.
So we have to do continued education courses. So you want to make sure that when you're going to look for somebody or you see somebody talking good and you're like, yeah, it's one thing to be an inspirational speaker. There's another thing to be somebody who is equipped in the nuances of your journey. And shout, I'm going to say this as we end to all my pastors out there, get you a therapist that you are referring your members to, because we can love Jesus, but we need a therapist too. And some of the clinical support is being under the umbrella of not just spiritual counseling, but y'all understand my heart. You need spiritual sensitivity with clinical expertise in Jesus' name.
Yes.
Brandy, thank you for being with me on the podcast. Is there anything you'd like to leave my listeners with?
I would say, you know, wherever you are in your healing journey, be patient with yourself. And again, know that it is your journey. It's not anyone else's. And just, you know, get the support that you need. I think we've talked enough about mental health on social media and just in the media about getting support. So I would say there are enough resources out there. Reach out. You know, I think a lot of times there's this idea that you have to go, again, you know, see a psychologist for your mental health needs. And I love psychologists. And there are also other mental health professionals that you can book your sessions with.
Absolutely.
Marriage and family therapists, licensed therapists. So if you can't find that psychologist, you know, there are also other professionals who can provide the counseling services that you need. So yeah, just this is your journey, man. Just take it seriously.
Absolutely. And you deserve a safe space to navigate your journey. Well, thank you for being with me, friend. I'll see you next time.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Y'all, we are officially launched. Bite-sized Breakthroughs for Busy Women is officially ready for you to dive in. Y'all, I am super proud of this membership. I created this membership for the busy woman. But listen, we're not glorifying busy on this side of the world, but we are working within the realities of your life. And so you can invest in Bite-sized Breakthroughs for Busy Women, and once a week, for 15 minutes or less, you will receive an aha, a nugget, a principle, a scripture, something for you to ponder for, the week, for you to take notes, for you to consider what that principle means to you, to help you understand you, to help you get a PhD in you. And y'all, the investment is so minimal. The investment is less than you would even imagine for you to get this level of transformation. It is my passion to help as many of you transform your life, to live intentionally, fully engaged, to elevate not just what you do, but who you are. So if you are ready for transformation, just head on over to robinmayonline.com/breakthrough. And if you have any questions for me, head on over to Instagram and DM me. I cannot wait to talk to you about it. I am so proud and so excited about this membership.